Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Let us do what's right, even when it's hard. The Utah Legislature's 45-day session is underway. Utah's new debate over how to handle homeless people, a forceful hand or a better funded one. And could floating solar help save Utah's shrinking lakes and boost the state's power supply? Joining me today are Salt Lake Tribune State Watch reporter Emily Anderson Stern. Emily, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thank you. With us as well is Westside Communities reporter Jose Davila IV. Jose, thank you.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks so much.
Good morning. And Water and Land Use reporter Leah Larson's with us. Thank you, Leah.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, let's start with Emily Anderson Stern. So that quote in the headline, let us do what's right even when it's hard, that's Speaker Schultz, I believe. What did he say?
Right. That was during his opening speech for the session. And he actually started by recounting the story of a state lawmaker from the early 1900s from your neck of the woods. His name was David Robert Roberts, and he developed a reputation during his time in the legislature for championing making better roads in the state at a time when the state was transitioning from using mostly wagons to cars. And Speaker Schultz said that during that time, he got a lot of public opposition for it and for spending so much time and money on it. And Speaker Schultz compared the late Representative Roberts' experience to what lawmakers taking on controversial issues are dealing with in the present. And so he said, let us do what's right, even when it's hard, because someday Utahns will live in a state shaped by choices we made quietly, faithfully, and with conviction. So he was drawing a line from roads to a lot of the issues that lawmakers get pushback for now, whether it's, you know, culture war issues relating to LGBTQ rights or you know, expanding nuclear or starting to rely on nuclear energy in the state.
Well, we mentioned Speaker Schultz's remarks. We should give equal time, I guess, to President Adams. What did Stuart Adams say over the Senate?
Stuart Adams, he gave a speech that was kind of it was wide-ranging, talked about a lot of the issues that lawmakers have taken on in recent years. And one of those things is tax cuts. There have been income tax cuts for 5 years in a row. And he talked about how he would like to see this be the sixth consecutive year that lawmakers cut income taxes.
So you note that lawmakers likely will propose roughly 1,000 pieces of legislation. How many bills do we have already set to go?
Well, on the first day, it was just over 500. But since then, there have been dozens of bills that have been added to that number. Right now, as we're speaking, there are 570 bills that have been published and are available.
Yeah. You know, three quarters of the legislators are running for re-election, and so that probably means, speculating here, on the Republican side, maybe more culture war type bills.
Yeah, that is a lot of what we're seeing, and yeah, kind of the a conservative approach to populism, and so there are a lot of bills that, for example, take aim at or attempt to help President Donald Trump's push to deport immigrants without citizenship status or without legal status. There's different approaches. There's the tax cuts that are coming, even as, you know, Democratic lawmakers on the other side are raising questions as to whether the state can afford those, as it's urging just about every agency in the state to cut its budgets. And there are still more housing affordability proposals, as we've seen in recent years, as housing in Utah has become increasingly expensive.
Let's divert here just briefly. You have a separate story on transgender and reproductive rights. Let's talk, focus in on that just a little bit right here. What are we going to see in that area?
Well, I think one of the big, there are quite a few bills in this area, but one of the big questions is how many of those will actually make it to a debate before any bills in the legislature are publicly debated or voted on. They have to get out of what's called a rules committee, which approves bills to go. They essentially decide where bill which committees bills go to, where there would be a public debate, people would have the chance to offer public comment. And House Speaker, most the majority, the vast majority of these bills touching on so-called culture war issues are coming out of the House of Representatives. Speaker Mike Schultz said he is not sure yet how many might make it out of the Rules Committee, but it's sounding like, some will, but not all of them. One of the major ones that we will most likely see voted on, because it does already have a Senate sponsor, is one HB 174 from Representative Rex Shipp, which would make the moratorium on gender-affirming care for transgender youth a permanent ban. And that comes after medical evidence review, which was passed with the moratorium bill in 2023. That was published in May, and it found that gender-affirming care largely results in positive outcomes for transgender youth with gender dysphoria. But lawmakers are moving to ban it anyway. But there are definitely some bills that are more wide-ranging. There's one from Representative Trevor Lee, who's become known for these kinds of proposals, that essentially it, would erase transgender Utahns' ability to live openly in the state. It would make it so that people could not amend their gender on their birth certificate. It would prohibit employing transgender people in some positions working with children in the state. And if there is a transgender child who is caught up in a custody battle, it would require judges to favor a parent for custody if they oppose their child transitioning to their gender identity. And that's just, a few things in that bill that would impact transgender rights. There's also a bill from Representative Nicolene Peck of Tooele that would bar all public funds from going toward gender-affirming healthcare for transgender people. And so that would mean that any public employees who are on their employer's health insurance could not use that insurance to access gender-affirming care. It would mean that anyone who receives Medicaid in the state could not access gender-affirming care with that coverage. And there's a possibility that it could close one of the largest transgender health programs in the state at the University of Utah's hospital.
Senator Adams, this was in his speech, your report. He says Utah should be the home of a new U.S. Department of Energy lab focused on the nation's supply of critical minerals. I guess he's pushing that. Governor Cox, I think, would be supportive of, as well.
Right. This seems like a larger push from Republicans. Speaker Schultz said that he supports the idea and mentioned that the lab could possibly be located at the University of Utah. And yeah, the governor said that he sees Utah as the best place for it, but it's part of a larger push that where the state is trying to attract nuclear energy to the state, trying to attract data centers. Just really trying to become a hub for a push into, technology expansion, whether, and trying to make sure that state regulations and lobbying for changes to federal regulations to make that a more feasible pathway and also a pathway that the state can move along more quickly.
You mentioned, of course, Representative Trevor Lee, several bills, some of those regarding illegal immigrants. One of those, the governor's slightly pushing back on that. One of the provisions would rescind the Utah's driving privilege cards to undocumented migrants.
Right. And it would take away a lot of, and there's another bill from him that would also take away public benefits like food subsidies, health services, vaccinations. And yeah, Governor Cox has said that, you know, there were reasons that these bills were passed in the first place. And he said that some of these bills were, you know, passed not necessarily to give benefits to people who are immigrants without legal status, but rather to protect Utahns who are U.S. citizens living alongside those immigrants. So, for example, with the driver's privilege cards, if people who are undocumented get into an accident, the driving privilege card allows them to get insurance so that anyone they're in an accident with would have some coverage to pay for the damages of that accident. He has also talked in the past about some of the public benefits given to immigrants without legal status, such as health coverage or vaccinations. And, you know, if someone doesn't have health coverage and goes to an emergency room, that care still has to be paid for, and it costs the state more money. And also offering vaccinations to people living in our community prevents the spread of disease. So, you know, he talked about how he doesn't think that those bills are things that necessarily are in the best interest, in his perspective, for Utahns.
I think there were various protest groups. You report in your story, at least one of those groups was protesting the actions of ICE.
Right. So on the first day of the session, just as business was finishing for the day and lawmakers and lobbyists, journalists were leaving the Capitol, there were hundreds of people gathered on the front steps of the Capitol to protest ICE. There were a number of chants that they were chanting. Some of them I could not publish in our story, but one of them was "Nobody is illegal." And that comes as there are a lot of protests across the country against U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and how they have been enforcing President Donald Trump's immigration policies. And, you know, as you've mentioned, some of the measures that are being pushed by lawmakers are to support those policies.
Just very briefly, I think we can fit this in. This is a story from last week on Title 10 funding. The Trump administration has restored at least part of that funding to Utah. They had withheld it previously. So what's Title 10 funding?
So Title 10 funding, it was passed in the 70s to help cover family planning services. It has never covered abortion or been allowed to cover abortion. But what it is to cover birth control. It covers cancer screenings. It covers pregnancy tests. It covers tests for sexually transmitted infections. And that funding is distributed through grants to organizations and states across the country. The only organization that's received that funding here in past years is Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. And President Donald Trump's administration last year had frozen some of the grants that were going out to some of the organizations. There ended up being several states that did not receive any Title X funds at all. And Utah was one of those states. And because of that, it made it so Planned Parenthood Association of Utah could not offer the free and discounted care that they had previously offered when it comes to birth control and sexually transmitted infections, because they didn't have the grant to cover that care. And so that grant did end up being dispersed earlier this month. But there is a question as to whether, you know, HHS has said they plan to change the rules about who's eligible for the grant. So there's a pretty big possibility that Planned Parenthood Association of Utah will not qualify for the grant again when those applications open up later this year.
Well, thanks for telling us about all these stories. We've been talking with Salt Lake Tribune State Watch reporter Emily Anderson Stern. Emily, thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. Following a break, here's the headline: Utah's new debate over how to handle homeless people, a forceful hand or a better funded one. We'll be talking with Westside Communities reporter Jose Davila IV. More following this break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. And we turn next to Salt Lake Tribune Westside Communities reporter Jose Davila IV. Jose, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's good to have you on. You had a story this week, Utah's new debate over how to handle homeless people, a forceful hand or a better funded one. We're talking mostly about this big planned, big new campus for homeless folks. Give us very briefly the outlines of that.
So last year, the state of Utah announced a site for a massive new homeless campus. The idea is that it could host up to 1,300 people. The site for the campus is a kind of rural corner of Salt Lake City. The neighborhood is called North Point, right now characterized by large kind of farms and family plots alongside kind of a big distribution warehouses that have sprung up to be right alongside Interstate 215 there. The campus organizers say and leaders say can really be a key to helping Utah respond to its growing homelessness crisis. The number of people homeless in the Beehive State jumped again last year to over 4,000 people. So they believe this could be a key part of the system. And then there are kind of differing views over what role the campus should play.
And this will play into the legislative session. I believe that this big campus needs state money. Is there going to be money allocated from the state for this?
Correct. Yeah, money is the big question with the campus right now. A couple sessions ago, lawmakers appropriated about $25 million to the campus, especially for acquiring the property. But they believe, specifically, former state homelessness coordinator Wayne Niederhauser believed that the campus would cost $75 million to build. And about $34 million a year to run. So this session, Governor Cox has asked lawmakers to spend another $25 million on capital costs for the campus, to help build it, basically, and an additional $20 million in ongoing funding that, continues year after year to target high utilizers. These are homeless Utahns who have cycled through, private and state-run programs, but have yet to really find their way out of homelessness. And so Spencer Cox, as well as other state leaders, see the campus as a way to help focus efforts on that subpopulation of homeless Utahns. So there is a big ask right now on that front. On the other side of the aisle, per se, Democratic lawmakers, specifically Westside, Salt Lake City Westside Democratic lawmakers, Senate Minority Leader Luz Escamilla, House Minority Leader Angelo Romero, they have been critical of the campus, critical of its site, critical of its cost, and question kind of the plans for it. So there's kind of some pushback, some headbutting here as we head into this legislative session.
Very interesting here. I had not been aware of some of this. I'll just quote from your story. There's an ideological split between the system's longtime operators and a new wave of policymakers and lobbyists who want to chart a different course. Of course, everybody wants to help the homeless. There seems to be this ideological split on how to go about it. Tell me about this.
Yeah, correct. This is something that I think has really kind of exploded into life a little bit since the announcement of the campus's site. And then now what are discussions about what role it should play in the wider homeless services system. I think there are a new group of people who in order to free up space in the homeless services system, as well as target these high utilizers that we've already talked about, believe that civilly committing and involuntarily treating homeless Utahns for whether it be substance use or substance abuse or mental illness, they believe Utah needs to do more of that. One of the people who's been talking a lot about this is Devin Kurtz. He's a director at a conservative think tank known as the Cicero Institute. House Speaker Schultz has also kind of thrown his weight behind that approach. And it's kind of falls in line with a summertime Trump executive order that encouraged local and state politicians to boost behavioral health care and boost involuntary treatment as a way to get homeless people off of the streets. Now, there's another group here in Utah who believes that that wouldn't be the best way to approach homelessness, and instead believe that the system works relatively well, which it does for many. If somebody goes into a homeless shelter here in the Salt Lake Valley, they're usually out of that shelter within 3 months, 75% of people that's the case for. And so the people that kind of run the shelters and other advocates really believe that Utah still just needs to build more housing, and specifically perhaps more transitional housing and more permanent supportive housing. So there's a lot of back and forth on that right now. And the campus is kind of at the center of the debate because there's some people, including the state homeless board chair, Randy Shumway, who believe that the campus should have these involuntary treatment beds, whereas others kind of believe that, the campus can just be a shelter and a low barrier shelter where anybody can go. And so that's the sort of crux of the debate at the moment.
I want to follow up just a little bit. So Mr. Kurtz and others who are in favor of involuntary commitment, voluntary mm-hmm. services, what would be the advantage there to the overall effort, the overall system?
So basically, Kurtz's point is that the people, these high utilizers, people who have kind of deeper problems other than housing, other than an eviction, right, or something like that, is that those people are going to fail, they're not going to do well in if they just get keys to a new apartment, if they get into some transitional housing program without additional help, without additional substance abuse treatment, without additional mental illness treatment. And so those people are going to take up these valuable spots, or are taking up these valuable spots that could go to other folks who kind of may have less thorny issues. And instead, Kurtz believes, okay, if we take those people out of the system, and get them this longer term treatment that we think they need, civil commitment, generally speaking, it has to be ordered by a judge, basically saying that someone's not, fit to make their own decisions. There's a really high bar right now to do such a thing. So then by taking those people out of the system, that makes it easier for the people who just need a new place to live. Let's say they already have a job or something. It makes it easier for them to move through the shelter system and out quickly into a new place, without having to wait behind, for lack of a better term, people who keep cycling in and out and for whom the current system does not work.
Interesting. Now, Representative Romero, she calls this, if they have involuntary commitment beds there, she calls it an internment camp. Is civil rights, is that the biggest objection that opponents to this involuntary commitment idea have? Are there other objections?
That is certainly one of the big objections, alongside, you know, this effort to just simply build more of these beds and allocate more of these beds, these involuntary beds. Kurtz and others also seem to be pushing for a watering down of these civil commitment laws, insofar as, you know, they're hoping that the state could loosen up, perhaps, or the federal government could loosen up civil commitment laws so that, you know, the state can treat more people involuntarily, treat people against their will. And so that is a big concern for Representative Romero, for Salt Lake City Democratic Senator Jen Plum. At the same event where Romero called the campus an internment camp, Jen Plum called it a warehouse where they could put people that they didn't want to see. And so there are concerns that this is just a way to hide people and get people off of the streets, but not really provide them any better help. And so there is certainly some pushback there over the concerns, over civil rights concerns for homeless Utahns.
Of course, the bottom line, I think a lot of these experts agree that you won't really make significant progress on homelessness until you tackle housing, I believe.
Yeah, and that's definitely, I think that is more of a focus for this camp that believes that the system does generally work as it should, and that there are just little tweaks that need to be made. It seems like Josh Romney, who's the board president of a nonprofit called Shelter the Homeless, he said the greatest need is still transitional and permanent supportive housing for people that are homeless. And he was worried when I talked to him that, you know, if the state rushes to fill this gap of involuntary treatment, this idea that there aren't enough involuntary treatment beds for people, are we just putting that money and it's not exactly the money that would do us the most good, that would help the most people? And so that's the concern. And I think there's this idea that one, you know, housing is, first of all, much cheaper than involuntarily treating someone for some sort of illness. And two, that even more so, preventing people from becoming homeless in the first place is really cost effective as well. So there's certainly a push still from many providers that believe the answer to this question and the way that we can help the homeless services system and homeless Utahns move on from that situation is simply by building more housing.
One small part of this that really piques my interest, the governor, you mentioned part of his budget sends more money to the Other Side Village. Tell me about this.
So the Other Side Village is a tiny home community on the west side of Salt Lake City. You know, it has garnered the backing of many state lawmakers and leaders on both sides of the aisle, including Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall. It is basically permanent supportive housing. People who live there have to go through a sort of preparatory program. They have to be chronically homeless. They have to have been living in Utah. They have to be sober or want to be sober. And then once they go through this program, they get a little tiny home to themselves. But it's in kind of a supportive community. They're alongside their peers who went through this prep school program. Leaders seem to really like it because it emphasizes self-sufficiency and self-reliance. The other side is kind of an umbrella of organizations, including the Other Side Academy, which serves a slightly different population. And then all of their associated businesses. They have a moving company. They have a storage business. They have a donut shop. And so people who go through the program do job training. And then generally speaking, can have jobs working in these businesses. And so their lawmakers seem to really like that idea. And the nonprofit's leaders or the company's leaders want to expand that village and build more tiny homes. So the governor has allocated $5 million in his budget that he's asking lawmakers for to expand that village further.
Well, very interesting. I'm sure you'll keep tabs on this whole thing. We've been talking with the Salt Lake Tribune Westside Community reporter, Jose Davila IV. Jose, thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. Following a break, here's the headline we'll be talking about. Could floating solar help save Utah's shrinking lakes and boost the state's power supply? We'll be talking with Salt Lake Tribune water and land use reporter Leah Larson. More following this break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams, and we bring in Salt Lake Tribune water and land use reporter Leah Larson. Leah, thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
So interesting. Here's the headline. Could floating solar help save Utah's shrinking lakes and boost the state's power supply? It's something I hadn't really ever focused on. And I'm looking at a photo here in your story. This is, we don't have this in Utah, at least at this point, right? So this is a photo from a water storage pond in New Jersey. And there they are, this solar array floating on the water. I guess that's what this is.
Yeah, I guess it kind of looks exactly what you would imagine. It's some solar panels floating on a lake. Yeah. So just to kind of set the stage, the reason why we're even talking about this in Utah is, of course, because we have issues with water. Our Great Salt Lake has shrunk quite a bit. It's half the size it should normally be. And it's not just the Great Salt Lake that's struggling, of course, but Utah Lake, our largest freshwater lake in the state, is very big and shallow like the Great Salt Lake. So it faces problems, not just with water quantity, but water quality, because being shallow, the water gets warm when the sun beats down on it and it gets all these algal blooms that nobody likes. And then our reservoirs, look at the mountains, look at our snowpack this year. It's just so dismal. And that's not great for reservoirs when we need them to fill. And then on top of that, we also have an energy supply issue. We have all these data centers popping up around Utah and the West and the rest of the nation. We have, there's all these predictions that our transportation is going to become electrified. So there's all these demands on the grid. And of course, Governor Spencer Cox has made both the Great Salt Lake and doubling our energy output in the next decade some of his top priorities. So with that all in the background, right ahead of the legislative session beginning, there was a committee hearing this month where, this idea was floated, pun intended, by a Democratic lawmaker. It was by Representative Hoang Nguyen, who is a new representative from Salt Lake City. So she brought this to the table and, I think it's kind of a struggle for Democrats to get anything passed on the Hill with the Republican supermajority, but it did seem like Republican members of this committee were at least intrigued by this idea, didn't just brush it off outright. So who knows? Who knows the solar panels are coming? And I know Tommy mentioned they haven't made it to Utah yet, but that's not quite true. There's a small water treatment pond in Park City that the Park Record wrote about recently. Tiny pond. So it does have some solar panels, and they love it because the panels generate some electricity to help them pump the water into the treatment plant and treat the water. So it helps them save some costs that way. But I would say too that there is a huge difference between putting some panels on a water treatment pond versus a lake like the Great Salt Lake or even a reservoir where people, like, I'm thinking about putting a massive solar farm over Hiram Dam's reservoir. Like, I'm sure some boaters would have something to say about that if they had a reduced
Yeah, for sure.
surface area to go boating on. So we'll see. We'll see if this gets legs, but people at least seem to be intrigued by it.
I think you quote, I think it's Linda Freitas from Friends of the Great Salt Lake saying that, well, the Great Salt Lake's pretty big. The salt could corrode these panels, and they have waves there that could be a problem. So the problem's still to solve, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Great Salt Lake, like you pointed out, has a whole plethora of its own problems for a thing like this. So the people that brought this forward, there's like this company called Utah or Solar, WaterWise Solar Solutions is what they're called. Utah-based company. I don't think that they have actually any projects within Utah that they can point to yet, but its founders, this company's founders seem very well educated, smart people. So I don't want to like poo-poo what they're saying. But yes, they called. So, we have the pond in Park City that's got solar panels on it. It probably isn't putting out a ton of power, but enough to offset their costs for treatment. But they also said like these things could work really well on reservoirs where there's already dams connected to transmission lines because they produce hydropower already. So, like, great thing to pair them with. But what they said is their big target, like their big focus is Utah Lake and the Great Salt Lake. And to your point, when I heard the Great Salt Lake, I'm thinking to myself, the Great Salt Lake is super salty. And these two guys, these two business owners, they mentioned like, well, there are these solar farms that are popping up on other salty waters that have been proven to work. But I think, it's more ocean water, and ocean water has something like 3% salinity, but the Great Salt Lake has like 15% salinity. And I don't know, Tom, if you've ever been out on the Great Salt Lake when some waves kick up, but that water is dense. It hits a little differently than waves in freshwater. Like, you can feel it. So yeah, I'm just wondering, wave action, is it going to destroy these farms? Like, what are they going to do? Also, just the salinity itself just famously loves to eat through metal, like super salty water and metal don't generally work too well. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. Also, we have issues with the Great Salt Lake and Utah Lake are waters that at the time of Utah statehood were considered navigable for like commercial purposes. So the state now has a duty to manage them for navigability. So if you're throwing a bunch of solar farms out on the lakes, what are boaters going to say about that? Or you can find yourself in court. So I could go on and on and on.
Yeah,
I'm not, again, I'm
right.
not trying to poo-poo their ideas here. I think the other thing that I would say is that the areas of the Great Salt Lake that are closest to transmission lines and like population centers that would need energy are also the areas that birds really like to visit because they're by rivers and deltas. And solar panels and birds don't always get along super well. So well, again, we'll see if this gets legs.
Let's talk a little bit more about the pro side here. This could potentially prevent some evaporation. If you have a solar panels, that it could help that way.
Oh yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I pointed out we have water shortage issues as well as energy issues. So the solar panels clearly would help contribute to the energy shortage issues, but how does it help with water, right? So yes, the idea is that if you float panels over water, it lowers the water temperature and decreases evaporation. And the Great Salt Lake and Utah Lake do evaporate a mind-boggling amount of water every single year. It's just kind of their natural cycle. Like, if you watch the Great Salt Lake's elevation over the course of a year, you'll kind of see it ebb and flow because it gets this pulse of water in the springs and it fills up, and then the temperatures rise and it starts to evaporate, and so the lake will recede. So it's kind of up and down every year, our water consumption aside. So the idea is by putting panels out there, it will help decrease some of that evaporation and lower water temperatures to help benefit aquatic life. So that's definitely one of the pros that has been floated.
Yeah. And I guess if you got these arrays on water, they're not using up land.
Yeah, right. That's another pro that they're pointing to. it doesn't conflict with land use as much. Although, again, like this is just the reporter in me. I'm just kind of skeptical because Utah's got a lot of open land and it's very sunny. And yes, a lot of Utah's land is owned by federal agencies like the Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service. So if you want to permit a solar farm, you've got to go through all these processes and all this paperwork. But I just have a hard time believing that putting a solar farm over a water body like the Great Salt Lake wouldn't take the same amount of environmental review and study. I don't see this being a quicker process per se. But I think that's why maybe these floating solar farms are so popular in Asian nations, like more island nations like Indonesia or like Taiwan, where they don't really have a lot of land area. So putting it on water maybe makes a little more sense for them because they're just, they don't have the space. But in Utah, we still have quite a lot of space. So.
There was just one. I'll just mention this and move on to another story. An idea was floated to put these across canals, and that there's a
Yes.
whole canal companies are interested slash skeptical, I guess.
Right. I think so. I think that, like the discussion did pivot to that. And that is not what these two, business startup gentlemen were here to discuss was canals. They're really got their eyes on the Great Salt Lake and Utah Lake and to a lesser extent, some of our reservoirs. But yeah, Weber Basin Water Conservancy District, which serves Weber, Davis, and some of the Box Elder County. They're already kind of looking at putting solar panels over some of their big canals to reduce evaporation. And also by shading the canals, you don't get aquatic species or aquatic plants growing that kind of suck up all the water and, transpire it into the air. And so you lose it. So they're already kind of looking at that. So they like this for that. But of course, that wouldn't be panels floating on a canal. It would be more fixed in place. I'm thinking of like if you go to. Have you ever seen those parking lots where they have like covered parking and then there's solar panels on top? That's kind of what I'm picturing, but over a canal. So they're already looking at that, and they like the idea of it. And then I guess Bear River Canal Company, which is the biggest water right holder, the biggest water user on the Bear River. It's mostly agricultural irrigators, but they did, I guess, explore the idea of putting solar panels over their canals for those two reasons, to prevent evaporation and to kind of snuff out aquatic species. But to them, it didn't quite pencil out like the amount of money they would have gotten from the utility, which is probably Rocky Mountain Power, that they would have paid them for the power they're supplying to the grid, didn't really pencil out in terms of the cost of installing these things. But one of the lawmakers on this committee hearing earlier this month was like, well, what about the water that you save? Did you run that through your calculation? Like the power bought by the utility plus the amount of water your irrigators would save, then would it pencil out financially? And the general manager of the Bear River Canal Company did seem intrigued by that and looked like he was going to run the numbers again with that in mind. So we'll see.
We'll see, yes. We just have about 2 minutes for this. I have to go quick on this, but you had a story last week about water bills and issues to watch during the legislative session. Maybe just pick out a couple of those that you want to highlight that we might see in this session.
Actually, I wanted to highlight one that I didn't include in that story, but I should have. And there's a hearing about it this afternoon at 2 p.m. Actually, it's HB 60. And this has a lot of water conservation groups, these watchdog groups, concerned because what HB 60 is trying to do is kind of hem in the definition of public welfare. So, our state engineer, anytime somebody files an application for our new water right or to change your water rights or whatever, she has one of the things she's charged to do is consider if it would impact public welfare. And public welfare is kind of a broad term that can be interpreted different ways. Like, if you, I was talking to a source about this yesterday. He's like, you could give it to 10 different people or 10 different judges, and you'd get 10 different definitions of what public welfare is. So, why environmental groups like it is because when somebody applies for water right, an environmental group could file a protest and point out like this is affecting the public welfare because we can't use it for recreation if they do this, or it might impact the Great Salt Lake, things like that. But as they this bill may hem in what that definition is, these groups are worried that only water right holders in the area that could potentially be impacted by a new water right, they're the only ones who will be able to file protests and ask the state engineer to reconsider. And it will kind of ice them out of the process. So that is a big bill to pay attention to and is probably causing the most stir as far as water goes on the Hill so far this session. So.
One thing for I'll urge people to go and read Leah Larson's story on the potential bills, and I'm sure Leah will be covering all of this, the water bills going through legislature. Water leasing may get revisited.
Yeah.
There was kind of a push and on come the crisis a couple of years ago. Now we're kind of back to the crisis of the Great Salt Lake to allow people to rest their water rights, right, or transfer them. Tell me briefly about this.
Yes. Right. So when the Great Salt Lake hit its record low in 2021 and then again 2022, there was all this movement on the Hill to reform our pioneer era water law. And one of the big things lawmakers honed in on to save things like the Great Salt Lake and the Colorado River is to pay farmers and water right holders to use their water rights, to not use their water rights, actually, to lease them to the state, not sell them permanently, but to lease them. They could rent their water rights to the state for the benefit of an environmental purpose, like refilling the Great Salt Lake. So this was like the big plan that was going to save everything, our big reform, our progressive idea. And that all happened in 21 and 2022. And then last year they kind of paused because they, lawmakers wanted to see all these reforms take effect and see if they were moving the dial. And while people have leased water to help the Great Salt Lake and the Colorado River, it hasn't been a rate and rapidly enough and with enough uptake, I suppose, to actually move that dial. So we did hear some kind of rumblings and whispers that are not whispers so much, but like implications from people like us, Majority Leader Casey Snyder, that they will be relooking at the leasing program and seeing if they can reform it to get more participation, I guess. So that's something I'm anticipating this year.
All right, we'll take a look at that and all the other water bills they go through. Water and Land Use reporter Leah Larson has been with us. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Let's turn now to our underplayed stories of the week. Emily Anderson Stern, what's your underplayed story?
Hi, Tom. My underplayed story is actually one from yesterday from my colleague Addie Baird, just about an interesting committee hearing in which a Utah senator tried to limit what ICE can do in the state, and it drew quite the crowd, but it ended up failing.
All right, check that out. SLTrip.com. Jose Davila IV, what's your underplay story?
If Emily picked something from yesterday, I'll pick something all the way back from Monday. Julie Jag, our ski reporter, had a great story about Snowland, which is Utah's newest little ski area. It's very fun. It sounds like a great place to go hang out. So go ahead and read it.
SLTrip.com for that one as well. And Leah Larson, what's your underplayed story?
Yeah, maybe I feel bad for Snowland that this is the year that they open, man.
Right, yeah.
So mine is by my colleague Brooke Larson. She looks like Bears ears is in our congressional delegation's crosshairs once again. This time they're turning to this kind of obscure, unheard of rule in Congress to overturn the management plan for this national monument to kind of, I guess, gut it and Bears ears has like long been controversial, and his peers of controversy has not died down. So check that story out. It published today.
All right, SLTrib.com for that one as well. Well, on Behind the Headlines today, we've been talking with Emily Anderson Stern. Emily, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Jose Davila IV has been with us as well. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thank you. And Leah Larson has been with us. Thank you, Leah.
Yes, have a nice weekend.
You too. You've been listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Hope you'll be with me again next time.